to American Statesman Blog Talk Radio, the place where it's all about duty, honor, and country. Today's Thursday, May 22nd, 2014. This is Sally Baptist speaking, and thank you for tuning in to this week's edition of Smart Talk, Election 2014, Know Your Candidates. The call-in number is 347-857-4364. Press 1 to be placed in the host queue to speak on the air. If you don't press 1, I won't know you want to talk, and I will let you continue to listen, and I won't bother you. So make sure you press 1 if you want to speak on the air. Now, tonight, we've got I'm going to go over some general updates and things going on for the first hour, and then Sherry Smart and Neil Rice will be on the second hour, and they have a special guest, Bob Starr. He's a former county commissioner of Charlotte County here in Florida, and he's going to have some good stories to tell about what it's like being in public service, what Florida government's like, and dealing with Tallahassee. So it should be pretty interesting and enlightening. I fear some of the things he'll probably tell us about what's really going on when you're on the other side of the commission. But we'll hear about that at 8 o'clock. But for right now, let's go ahead and talk about some things that are going on, my rant of the hour. I get to rant for a whole hour on Thursdays now. OAS, Operation American Spring, didn't quite go the way most of us had wanted. I really don't understand what happened. I'm still trying to kind of figure it all out because if they would have had the same turnout as they had at the Bundy Ranch, it would have still been a success. But it really it wasn't anywhere near that, and I don't truly understand what happened. I don't know why the people didn't show up kind of thing. Part of me is saying, well, I wasn't there either. I wanted to be there, and I tried to promote it as much as I could, but the truth is I just was not able to go at this time. And I'm actually hoping that they're going to regroup and maybe have another one. Schedule another Operation American Spring when they see what else they can maybe do. Better coordinate it, but, I mean, we have to remember that mainstream media, and even the conservative talk show radio hosts, the national ones, they wouldn't talk about it at all. And that was, I think, a big reason why it failed, because there was not the media. The media was blackballing it in its own way. It's we have such a disgusting media. It's unbelievable. Can't trust them. So I was very disappointed in what happened with Operation American Spring because I truly did believe in it, and I still believe in it, and I still hope we'll do something with it. But we have to get past the garbage the media is doing, what the media did to it. And that includes Glenn Beck. excuse me. I can't tell you how totally disgusted this, between the incident out at the Bundy Ranch and the Operation American Spring, showed to me a different side of Glenn Beck I hadn't seen. Very disgusting to me. I was very disappointed, and the hypocrisy of it all seemed to, I don't know, it just, I was just very surprised. The fact that he wouldn't even talk about it, except to say, don't do it, he didn't believe in it, you're nuts, which I thought was insulting. I mean, he trashed the people who were participating in this instead of having an open dialogue, open discussion, because, I mean, he goes around preaching, the truth lives here, the Blaze, the station, the network you are building or you are making, and, you know, there's all this kind of hype like this. But the truth is Glenn Beck is no different than any other lamestream media out there. In some ways, he's worse because he keeps promoting that he's different. So to that degree, I'm very disgusted. I made a point to listen to the first show after Operation American Spring, which was Monday. Glenn Beck was not on it, and I guess I really wasn't too surprised. He, on some of these tough topics like this, I don't think he wanted to be on it. He was probably already getting blasted via the email and whatever else out there on what he had done. But then it was Pat and Stu were there, and Pat made this comment, calling the people involved with Operation American Spring psychos. You know, when I heard that, I turned it off. I said, I'm not listening to this. If this is what Glenn Beck stands for today, he's already been converted over into the typical crap that's out there, and he's no different. and I have not listened to Glenn Beck since then. I haven't listened to any of his shows, haven't read anything on The Blaze, and I do plan on sending a goodbye letter to Mr. Glenn Beck, because that kind of hypocrisy is the most disgusting. I mean, he's out there preaching something so different. He's pretending to be whatever it is, and it's like, well, you know what? Is this where we come up to the, what's the meaning of, or beware of false prophets? Is that what this was all about? This is what Glenn Beck really is? I was just extremely frustrated. And, I mean, my frustration started with him on the thing with the Bundy Ranch, where he actually seemed to support the Bureau of Land Management over the Bundys. And it's like, it makes no sense. He's talking about nonviolence, which is good. Operation American Spring was definitely promoted as nonviolent. And at the same time, when you think about what happened on the Bundy Ranch, had those people not been armed at all, not most of them weren't, but for those that were, had they not been armed at all, does anybody truly think the BLM would have just said, oh, it's okay, we'll walk away, when here they came as a military coup to go out there and try and destroy everything? It's unbelievable, everything with what Glenn Beck and The Blaze is saying. I still like Andrew Wilkow out there, so I don't know whether I'm going to try to listen to him someplace else. Oh, and Doc Thompson, you know, he's the same piece of garbage, listening to him on his talk radio thing in the morning. So I haven't listened to that either. So I haven't listened to anything to do with The Blaze or Glenn Beck since that happened. I don't know that I'll listen again. Just total disgust. It's like, well, don't trust Glenn Beck either. He's no different. And, you know, I find it so ironic as I'm thinking about some of these things, and it's like, he was out there, you know, claiming to be different. He really didn't like Mitt Romney, but he was going to support him because it was a lesser of two evils. And I mean, I was disgusted when he did that, but I also understood how many people were doing that same crap back then. And then, you know, of course, now he says he'll never do that again. He'll never choose the lesser of the two evils. Or again, this is his, whatever you want to call it, the line he's spewing out there today. But at the same time, in the state of Georgia, the District 11, which we happen to know Colonel Larry Mazinski was running in it, but also Bob Barr was out there, and Barry Loudermilk, excuse me. And we both know that both of those guys are rhinos. That's just what they are. But The Blaze, and I'm talking The Blaze via Doc Thompson and Glenn Beck, The Blaze refused to interview Larry Mazinski, Colonel Mazinski, while they were out there promoting Loudermilk, who was a rhino, and Larry Mazinski gave specific examples and votes of what Loudermilk did to show what he was. And Loudermilk, when a question came up, and this I thought was so telling, there was a forum where the different candidates were there, and somebody asked the question, would you waive taking any kind of compensation or pension plan from the House of Representatives? From being a representative, are you still going to take the pension, or are you going to reject it? And Larry Mazinski had told Long he would never take it. In this conversation, Loudermilk doesn't answer the question on behalf of himself. He literally says, the colonel's taken his retirement from the military. Like somehow that was anywhere near the same of working for 2 years in Congress and taking the pension and all the bennies they get there. This is what Glenn Beck endorsed. Glenn Beck was pushing for Loudermilk. He wouldn't even talk to the other candidates. So Glenn Beck is no different. I'm sad to say it. I started watching Glenn Beck when he was on CNN. So I watched him on CNN, on Fox, and then this. And I was really hoping this was going to be something different. But he is no different. It's disappointing. I wanted to keep believing that somebody out there was decent. And, I mean, I still agree with many of his positions on things, the Common Core stuff and things like that. But I can't go along when he plays these other games because he's no different than any of the other ones. He kept trying to say the truth lives here. This is different. We're going to report what others won't report. They refused to talk about Operation American Spring with any intelligent discussion. the day before it was going to hit, it actually happened on the 15th, May 15th. That was the first time I ever heard Glenn Beck say anything about it. And all he did is say, don't do it. It's the wrong thing to do. Don't do it. And he was preaching violence. It wasn't anything about violence. That wasn't what it was. He never gave any explanation. If he knew more, then he should have reported it. And he wasn't reporting on it. He was giving a commentary on it. So there was no reporting being done and no open discussion about what was really happening. They never had Colonel Harry Reilly on. So why, I want somebody to tell me, why is Glenn Beck any different than the rest? Because from what I saw happen between the Bundy Ranch and Operation American Spring, and in addition to other things I've seen Glenn Beck do over time, the Blaze slash Glenn Beck, to me, is just no different than anything else. So I'll see, I don't know whether I'll ever listen to him again, but I haven't listened to him since that, and I definitely won't listen to him until I get, I send him a letter, and I'll decide if I'll ever listen to him again. I don't need that kind of garbage. We need people that actually can be honest for more than a day. And, you know, he was out there preaching his story, but it's obviously been, he claims that he's putting all the money back into his company and all this other stuff. Yeah, whatever. I don't know. But on to the next topic. Unfortunately, Mitch McConnell won the primary, and it wasn't because he was the popular choice by the masses. It was because the GOP bought it out. And Mitch McConnell is the biggest out there trashing the Tea Party. When he trashes the Tea Party, he trashes the Constitution, because true Tea Partiers just strictly want to go back to constitutional government, and he doesn't believe in that. So this is what they have out there, and I truly don't believe he's going to get elected in the general. I don't believe the Tea Partiers that they've been insulting and trashing are going to just follow behind him. And the other part of this, which, again, personally, I think Glenn Beck screwed up on this one, too. Glenn Beck had Matt Bevin on many times, and the guy was really good. I was really hoping that he would win. But nobody is telling these people, you know what, you can't run as a Republican. I mean, I actually did suggest that to Larry Brzezinski as well, to run as a Libertarian so you'd be on the general ballot. But the sad part is these people think you got to stay within these two parties. Well, the good people will never make it as part of these two parties. I don't care which party you run as. If you're a Tea Party running as a Democrat or as a Republican, you will not, the majority will not get elected because of the establishment of both of these parties. They've got the money. And, of course, I keep asking people, please don't give money to any political party. And be extremely careful when you're giving it to these political PACs, because so many of them are garbage too. Don't throw your money away. If you've got money to waste, give it to me. I'll take it. I'll put it to some good use. Don't waste it on these if you truly believe in anything. Because these parties, for the GOP to support Mitch McConnell, what does that tell you? It tells you they're anti-Tea Party. So, okay, Tea Parties, you were the ones who helped get so many of those Republicans in there. Now the Republican Party is slamming you in the face, so slamming the door in your face and telling you to go take a flying leap. And they're out there boasting that the Tea Party's dead and all this other stuff, which I don't believe. The spirit of the Tea Party is not dead. The people are disgusted. And I'm going to tell you, I really hope Mitch McConnell doesn't get elected. But I really wish the likes of Glenn Beck and the others who were really pushing for Matt Bevin would have convinced him to run as a Libertarian or run as no party. Personally, I'm the no party affiliate. The people are so scared of that too. But at least run as a Libertarian candidate, because true conservatives aren't going to be elected as GOPers in most cases. That's why Mitch McConnell's there. And when we talk about that whole situation, to mention something in reference to Rand Paul, because he's out there. Let's see if I can find, hold on one second here. I've got this information I got from Rand Paul today, if I can find my copy of it. He was out there talking about the Republican principles. Let's see if I can find it. Now, see, the other thing, too, this is getting back with Rand Paul here. Now, everybody knows me, knows I was a big fan and still a fan of Ron Paul. No, you don't agree with anybody 100% of the time. I don't care who it is or what, you know, that kind of thing. But I was a big fan of Ron Paul's. But his son, Rand Paul, is trying to play the game a little bit differently. And I personally don't think it's going to work for him. And I've told him that in one of emails I sent to him in the past, but I want to send another one. Because Rand Paul endorsed Mitch McConnell. And why did he do it? So he says. And, I mean, I didn't believe a thing he said when this was Glenn Beck, who was interviewing him at the time, by the way. He said, well, it was because Mitch McConnell asked him to endorse him. And at that time, nobody else was running. Isn't that a pretty stupid excuse? Well, why not endorse him? There was nobody else. But let's face it. How many people truly think Rand Paul, his endorsement of Mitch McConnell, who hated the Tea Partiers, who opposed Rand Paul when he was running, do you truly believe Rand Paul believed in Mitch McConnell, or do you think Rand Paul was doing what he's supposed to do as a good Republican? He wants to be a good member or a good GOP puppet, do as the Republican Party tells him to do, because he somehow thinks he's going to garner some kind of support when it comes time to run for the presidency. That's what I see it as. If anyone sees anything different, please feel free to call in and share your opinions of it. Which, by the way, I forgot to open my chat room today. I wasn't paying any attention here. Let me get that chat room open. Everything he did with this was to play into the party politics. He was playing the role of the good GOP establishment candidate. And guess what? I don't want a GOP establishment candidate for the presidency. But I got this thing in the mail today. And it says, state, this is the Rand PAC, R-E-N-D-P-A-C, his political action committee, Rand PAC, statement of Republican principles to 2014 Republican candidates for U.S. Senate. The American people are hungry for principled Republican leadership, regardless of what lies and smears come from big government Democrats and special interests this election year. They must not surrender on key Republican principles, including lowering taxes and spending. High taxes and out-of-control spending aren't solving our problems. They're the root cause. Auditing the Fed, it's time to expose Federal Reserve secrecy and economic manipulation that lead to constant economic crisis for dollar destruction. Protecting civil liberties. Americans will not allow our federal government to run roughshod over our remaining freedoms in the name of security. As Benjamin Franklin said, they who can give up essential liberty to obtain a little safety deserve neither liberty or safety. Repealing Obamacare. This $2.6 trillion dollar disaster stands to wreck our economy. The National Republican Party can and must stand by efforts to stop implementation at the state level. Protecting the 10th Amendment. The National Republican Party should loudly stand with any efforts of states to take back control over their respective jurisdictions under the Constitution of the United States. Protecting the right to life, liberty, and property. We must work to stop infringements on our Second Amendment rights like the Feinstein gun bill, protecting the unborn, and end TSA. Now, at the bottom here, it's supposed to be signed. And that says, of course, below that, you know what else it's going to say, give money. But you know what? He didn't say anything about amnesty. Don't you find that interesting? He said nothing about amnesty. I find that very, very interesting. So Rand Paul is trying to play both sides, and he'll never win that way. So when you look at what these people are doing out there, what the party establishment's doing to the Tea Partiers, and then I'm looking, it's like, well, then I guess I should mention one other thing here. And who are we hearing from once again? Marco Rubio. out there trying to act like he's so into everything and knows what's going on and he should be the next president. So once again, I'm hearing the nonsense about him being the next president. So I'll tell you, if you ask me, the GOP, if you are a constitutionalist, you can't be part of the Republican Party. They're too hypocritical, even to the likes of a Rand Paul. I mean, it's all my, you know, what Rand Paul said on this thing here, you know, I don't disagree with any of it. I don't believe any of the Republican Party is going to do this anymore. Repealing Obamacare? Have you listened to the spewing that's going on with that? And I'm telling you, this thing about the amnesty, big deal. Voter fraud, amnesty, the fact that Rand Paul was too scared to put it in writing, it shows what he is. And you know what? People can say, well, you know, they can't say any of that stuff right now because then they wouldn't get elected. You know, they can't be honest. You don't expect them to do what they really believe. They can't get elected that way. The question is, what will he do once he gets there? Well, when it comes to this amnesty thing, I don't for a minute think he would get into office and do something different. Right now, he's out there pushing the amnesty thing just like the other idiotic Republicans and the idiotic Democrats. It's amazing to me, and I feel so sorry for the uneducated and uninformed. It's the lower class. The lower class will get bigger, and when I say lower, I am talking about the poverty people. Poverty will increase. Low income will get bigger. The middle class will die, and then you'll have the rich. And you truly will have two classes of society, the poor peasants and then the rich elite, because of what they're doing with amnesty. Not only amnesty, but the amnesty is one big, gigantic piece. How can they suggest that we need to bring workers into this country when we don't have people working here today? Everything to do with the spew on amnesty is just nonsense. But the fact that Rand Paul was too coward to talk about it in his principles. This is a statement of Republican principles. And I'm gonna kind of touch on it again real quickly here. You know, I won't read the whole thing, so I'll give the bullet points of it. This is Rand Pack, as in Rand Paul, statement of Republican principles to 2014 Republican candidates for U.S. Senate, which to me it shouldn't be just a Senate. It's for all of them. It shouldn't be just a Senate. I mean, to me, that by itself is stupid. The American people are hungry for principled Republican leadership. No, they're not. The American people are hungry for constitutional principles and honest integrity and statesmen, not a bunch of political elitists, not party politics. So that by itself I disagree with. Regardless of what lies and smears come from big government Democrats and Republicans, he said Democrats, but of course it's Republicans too, and special interests this election year, they must not surrender on key Republican principles, including, now he didn't say including and not limited to, he said including lowering taxes and spending, the Republicans don't do that today, audit the Fed, Republicans don't do that today, protecting civil liberties, they don't really do that today either, repealing Obamacare, they kind of pretend they do, but, you know, whatever, protecting the 10th Amendment, they don't do that either. Protecting the right to life, liberty, and property. They don't do that either. So, you know, it would be nice if Republicans would do this, but they don't do it today. They've already surrendered. They are no different than the Democrats. The Republican Party is no different. And we're going to see what Glenn Beck's going to do because he claims he's not going to go along the party lines and this and that. Excuse me, but he's already proven that he does that. He's already proven he's going to align himself with the GOP establishment because that's exactly what he did in Georgia. And, of course, that's what he did in the last presidential election with Mitt Romney. He was out there pushing for Mitt Romney. So, you know, it's a sad state of affairs. We got to get away from these stupid parties. And, you know, I will ask anybody that's out there, which may be too late for many of you, but if you were a Republican, you know, and the good old days of what the Republican Party was supposed to stand for, like conservative values, small government, all that kind of stuff. If you truly still believe that and you want to seek office, please run as a libertarian, because you won't stand a chance in the Republican Party, where they're going to trash you. If they can trash you at the primary, it's much, it's a good deal for them. They, once you're past that primary and now you're out there on the general ballot, the independents, who are blocked from participating in primaries in those states, not all states, but most states, they're not going to keep going to the Republicans. They want someone different. They want someone to believe in. Matt Bevin, he would have been so much better off if he would have run as a libertarian. And I don't understand why more people aren't doing that. And, you know, get away from the stupid two parties. You got to do that. And run. He could have run as a constitutionalist as well, and he could have done. He could have been on there. But, you know, every state's different on what parties they allow in their political parties and stuff like that. Florida has something like 26 political parties and that kind of thing. But the top three are the, you know, Republicans, Democrats, Libertarians. Those are definitely the three top ones. Nobody wants to talk about anything but the two. But when you're talking elections, we've got to say, first off, as the process is today, in case you haven't figured this out on your own, let me explain this to you. If you think the current process today, the current elections, that you can do anything to change this country, in the current election process today, you are fooling yourself. The elections are corrupt, and you won't be able to make a difference there. We have got to change the party system. And after that, let me see, what time is it here? Okay. Let me go ahead and talk about something a little bit local. But the key point is, the political process as it is today, you do not have the representation of your choice. The elections are bought and paid for. So until we change this mentality, until we really force a change at that ballot box, nothing, you don't stand a chance to do anything there. 2014 is not going to be anything different there. I'm expecting that some Republicans, some Tea Partiers, will pick up some slots on the Senate floor and on the House because of some other deals. But in the grand scheme of things of changing this country, it's not going to happen at the ballot box. Locally, I wanted to talk about something here in good old Orlando, Orange County. My favorite topic of transportation. And I am going to be having a show on the transportation. I've just not been able to get everybody, the right people together, and I may do it as a couple of weeks in a row because transportation is so corrupt across the board. But what's happening here in Central Florida, they're doing everything to screw up transportation, nothing to fix it, okay? Putting it as nicely as I can. We'll start with the Sunrail / Scamrail that many of us opposed for a long time ago. First 2 weeks it was running, it was free. And within the first 2 weeks of operation, there were two car accidents, two different accidents with it. Nobody was killed from what I understand, but there's been two accidents. The machines didn't work right, the ticket machines. So in many ways, I mean, I've already made my jokes. It's like, well, it looks like they had the same people setting up their system for Sunrail, Scamrail, as they did Obamacare. Must be the same group, because they can't seem to get anything to work right that way either. And then the first 2 weeks when it was free, they were boasting about 10,000 boardings, 10,000 riders, all this, look, it's packed, all these people standing in line, parking lots full. I mean, they made it such a hoopla over, well, it's free and it was new. You know, okay, free and new, 10,000 boardings a day routine, which, keep in mind, 10,000 boardings means 5,000 commuters, because you got to go one way and then go the other, you know. So in the overall scheme of things, when you talk about how many commuters it truly impacts a day, that would be 5,000. And that's when they're bragging about it. Well, now that it's pay service here, where you're actually having to pay for it, they're reporting numbers of 4,000 a day, 4,100 a day, something to that effect. Many of us are already suspicious of that, especially when they had all the problems with the ticket machines and everything else. But they're saying 4,000, and they were saying that they were projecting 4,300 to begin with and this kind of stuff. So they didn't feel like they were doing too bad. But again, in the grand scheme of things, 4,000 boardings a day is 2,000 commuters. And, well, 2,000 is a fair amount of people, but we've got to ask, where did they come from and how many of them truly were taken off the road to do this? Because, first off, most people would have to drive someplace to get to the station, and then many of the people on them are people who would have otherwise been taking a bus. So when it comes to net impact on traffic gridlock, as far as removing cars off the road, getting people out of their cars and onto ScamRail, minor difference. It's going to take some time to prove that, but when you talk 4,000 boardings a day, that's 2,000 commuters doing a round trip, how many of those 2,000 people were truly getting out of their cars and getting on the train? The reports they were showing, well, the parking lot's only about half full right now, so there's not, it's not like last week, you know, and all these kind of things. And but I didn't hear any of the reporters ask, do you typically take a bus? I didn't hear any reporter ask those who are on the train to say, how did you normally get to work? I want them to ask, how did you normally get to work? And prior to SunRail, ScamRail, how did you get to work? Did you take a bus? Did you take a car? Did you do some combination? Let's see. So you did drive all the way to work, and you walked to the train today, so you truly did take a car off the road today. Nobody wants to ask that question. I'll be out there at some point asking it somehow, some way. I'm going to do that survey if I have to myself, because I know local reporting won't do it because they have to be nice to the politicians, especially good old John Micah. So ridership, we're going to see what's happening. But I will be also writing it. I'm going to wait for a couple weeks, see what they're claiming their average is, maybe after a month of pay. And then I'm going to go out there and I'm going to start writing up my own article about how many potholes would have been filled without ScamRail? How many lanes would have been widened on I-4 without ScamRail? How many tolls could have been taken off the highways without ScamRail? So what's the real cost of ScamRail in the terms of traffic gridlock, in the terms of taxes, in the terms of more gridlock at the crossings? Like I said, there's already been 2 car accidents. So people around here better get used to car accidents, because Florida isn't like New York. It's not all underground. It's all above ground, and it causes traffic gridlock all over the place, regardless whether anybody on it or not. And I will be going out and doing a serious report on that at some point. But I want to see it out there in operation for at least a month or two before I go out there and start documenting some of the numbers. The other thing in reference to transportation is good old Orlando Orange County Expressway Authority. Okay, this is the toll authority for Orange County. Orlando is within Orange County. You've got Winter Park that's in Orange County, Winter Garden that's in Orange County, Apopka, Maitland. So you've got several city municipalities within Orange County, but they call it the Orlando Orange County Expressway Authority. It's the major hub of toll roads in Florida. Now they're putting Lexus lanes on I-4. John Micah, who helped put the Lexus lanes on I-4, is out there now on his campaign trail. No, I don't believe in putting tolls on the interstates. No. He's a liar, people. He's another one that the GOP will help get reelected, but he's a liar because he did help support getting the tolls on the interstates, and he promotes them. And he also is the one who is primarily responsible for ScamRail out there. But the Expressway Authority has been known as a culture of corruption for years. It was 8 years ago, I guess, right about now, 8 years ago, when a grand jury openly said it's a culture of corruption. The deals, the wheeling and dealing that goes on at the Orlando Orange County Expressway Authority is a negative to transportation. It's going to cost you more and do less. It's going to make a lot of people rich at our expense. It is not a public service. It's a scam. But the sad part, just recently they were investigating other issues. Once again, the culture of corruption. They indicted a Scott Batterson, one of the board members. They indicted him, and he's being charged with, per the state attorney, he's being charged with trying to bribe an engineering consultant. The guy should have never been on that board to begin with. He had financial interest in dealings with the Wekiva Parkway. He stood to financially benefit from it. He never should have been there, but Rick Scott put him there. Rick Scott knew what the guy was and put him there anyway. I believe he was a puppet for Rick Scott. He was out there to do the wheeling and dealing for Rick Scott in the transportation arena. So anyway, he's been indicted, and I sure hope he spent some serious time in jail. Then there's another member. His name is Marco Pena. He all of a sudden resigns for personal reasons. He was also under investigation. They did do some depositions or whatever else, you know, but there was definitely an investigation in his activities at that Expressway Authority as well. And all of a sudden he resigns. Why does he resign? For personal reasons. Yeah. What do you think? Another crooked one from the Expressway Authority. And then there's one other person still under investigation, and then a couple other board members. Unfortunately, one of them is Teresa Jacobs, the Orange County mayor. Excuse me. And then the guy who's the chair. Kenchum, I think, is his name. Something like that. But the culture of corruption exists. And here's the other thing. It's so corrupt as it is, yet Tallahassee, the morons of Tallahassee, self-serving morons of Tallahassee, voted to pass a bill, and David Simpson, key UA Florida Senator David Simpson, Lord only knows how much money he stands to make in this deal. Nobody will ever convince me he doesn't have all sorts of money coming in from his scam on this one here to take and combine several local expressway authorities into this one massive. They want to take the Orlando-Orange County Expressway Authority, empower it to be the Central Florida Expressway Authority. I mean, the corruption it does right here in Orange County isn't enough. We need to take it across the whole central part of the state, all the way over to Daytona and everything else. This is the mentality of the idiots of Tallahassee, Florida. That's why I'm really looking forward to listening to Bob Starr talk about his dealings with Tallahassee. So, and I happen to know my senator and my representative both voted for it, too, because they don't care about transportation. They don't care about the working class. It's all BS. They're out there trying to make their own money, their own deals, and start, you know, as soon as they report to work the first day as a public servant of any type, whether it be a senator or representative, they're out there trying to start to, garnering benefits, points, whatever you want to call it, with the pocketbooks who are going to fund their next campaign. That's all they're worried about doing. How can I make lots of money doing this? Not public service, it's get rich. We're here to scam the people and get rich, and we'll do it any way we can. And the Orlando Orange County Expressway Authority is a major tool to do it with. It's been so corrupt as it is. Now they have gone out there and expanded it, passed the bill in the Senate and the House to go out there and make it the Central Florida Expressway Authority. But right now, from my understanding, Governor Scott, has not signed off on it yet. And he was saying, well, he really hadn't seen it yet, and he hadn't looked at it, and this and that. And I'll tell you something. I have sent my emails I posted online. I called his office, and I attempted to fax, but they don't want you to fax stuff. They're withholding fax numbers nowadays. But I'm going to be faxing it all over the place, so it's going to get there. For Rick Scott to veto that bill. If Rick Scott, here, two of the people he assigned, he appointed Scott Batterson and Marco Pena to that expressway authority, and both of them one's indicted and one's resigning for personal reasons after being under investigation. If Rick Scott would go and actually support increasing the size of this corrupt agency, that tells you what an idiot he is. And, you know, I would have absolutely no hesitation or no reservations to go and say, tell Rick Scott to his face, you are an idiot. If he does this, he's an idiot for some other reasons too, but that's another story. But if he was to go out there and support and sign off on this deal, which he probably will because it's going to be campaign money there, because that's all this is about. But it will show you that he doesn't care about the people. It shows you he's corrupt. And, I mean, we already know that he's corrupt. Why do you think he had to take the fifth how many times when he was being investigated for Medicare fraud? Where did he get all his money? Yeah. Not because he was a genius business person, because he ripped off the Medicare system. And he took the fifth when he was questioned on it. He wouldn't take it. Why would he take the fifth? And here we got the corruption throughout. It's a cancer throughout the society. The cancer of the public servant. The elected public servant is the scum lords in some way, whatever you want to call it, scumbags. They do not care about this country. They do not care about the people. And the political parties empower them to continue this garbage. So when you go and give money to a political party, you are aiding the destruction of this country. And that's the absolute truth. If you believe in some candidate, give the money to the candidate. That's fine. I mean, if you're insistent on putting money into the campaign process, make sure you give it to a candidate, not to a party. Do not let the parties dictate who they're going to endorse and where they're going to spend their money, spend your money. Don't let them do it. The process is so corrupt. But this thing with the Expressway Authority, anybody out there in the state of Florida, not just Orlando, not Central Florida, if you are here in the state of Florida, you need to call Rick Scott's office. You need to call your representative and your senator. Call, fax, email. Go out to Twitter and whatever else. You need to get in their face that they need to veto the corruption. To go out there and expand on this is to promote more corruption. And if Rick Scott does that, that should tell you another reason why you don't want to vote for him. I'm still out there supporting Adrian Wiley. I hope we can have Adrian Wiley back on the show in the near future to talk about him being arrested for driving without a license, because he really is using that as a key issue for the Real ID, how they are taking invading on our privacy rights. But let me get to that in just a few minutes. But with this Expressway Authority, there could be no I don't know how to say this. I don't know maybe the best way to say this, but the whole point is, if you see what they're doing to the Orlando Orange County Expressway Authority, if you've been in Orange County for any amount of time, I'll say 10 years, 5 to 10 years, and you don't totally have your head buried in the sand or watching a silly football game or basketball game or whatever, you've got to know how corrupt that Expressway Authority is today. It's corrupt. It always has been corrupt. And to go and give it more power to make it even more corrupt is going to harm everybody in this area. And it's going to harm tourists, too. The tourists are also getting stuck with this bill. The money that the tourists pay on toll roads is money they don't spend in the restaurants. And here they are putting tolls on I-4. Now, they're Lexus lanes. But you can be sure it's not their intention to limit them to Lexus lanes down the road. They are going to piecemeal and say, well, we'll let the idiots and the peasants, you know, they're just the peasants. We have to treat the peasants, they're stupid. The American people are stupid. And so we have to do it this way so that we gradually get them into this. We suck them into it so that little by little, we take over, and they don't even know. And because it happened so slowly, they didn't really see what was going on. And because they're stupid, right? The American people are just too stupid. Floridians are too stupid. The sad part with Floridians is you have so many transplants here who truly haven't been here long enough to see what's going on, to really truly understand what's going on with the local government, local and state government. But then you also have many, not all, but many, coming from the Northeast, which, you know, well, wait a minute, we're supposed to give half our pay to the state. Isn't that what we're supposed to do? Isn't that the American way? You go out there, for every $100 you earn, you get 50 of it to the state/federal government? Isn't that the American thing? No. But, you know, that's what they've been trained and dumbed down to do up in the Northeast. So that's what they think you're supposed to do. So either you're on food stamps, not paying any taxes, and getting welfare subsidies, or you're at the top of the food chain, paying a lot of taxes, but also getting a lot of write-offs, a lot of bennies you get, or you're the middle class that's getting screwed on both sides. And that's really where most of us are. But the middle class is dying, and this country will not survive without a middle class. I don't know how anybody would think that it could. Well, those were some of the key issues I was going to get on today. But I was starting to talk to, you know, I want to really focus, this show is, we want to focus a little more about what's coming on with the elections. And 2014, what does 2014 really mean? Well, I definitely would like to see Harry Reid out of power in that Senate. That's not because I have so much faith in the Republicans, but Harry Reid really is the pits. I can't stand the guy. And, of course, we all know about everything he did with the money and the scams. What he did in Nevada against his own people, against his own state, against his own country, for his own personal wealth, with the ranch stuff that was going on, speaks volumes. At the same time, I was like, okay, you got Harry Reid, or if Mitch McConnell was to get reelected again and the Republicans take the Senate, would they be stupid enough to make him the Speaker again, the President, Senate President? Would he take over the Senate? Would the Republicans be stupid enough to do that? My opinion is yes, they would. Because he's an establishment person. He hates the Tea Party. He's trashed the Tea Party every which way he can, and that's the Republican Party. The Republican Party, and it was Tom Pastore who said it many times on this show in the past, he went after, he warned and ranted, and so did I. I mean, I don't think I was ranting quite as much as Tom was, but I was totally in agreement with Tom. Republicans, the Tea Party movement, they let the Republican Party take over it. It's like, how could you do that? They were part of the problem. How would you go out there and think you're going to solve the problem with either of these two parties? And if I heard it once, I heard it thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of times. Well, you got to go with one of the two parties. You got to take the lesser of two evils. And I'm like, no. Come on, people, stop. Enough is enough with taking the lesser of two evils. Stop it. If we cannot get somebody decent in public office, then it's over. Flag out. Say, well, we've been converted to the peasants. You know, we really have. So please, please take ownership of your vote. Don't surrender it. And I'll tell you, Mitch McConnell, I really don't think he can win. I don't think the Tea Partiers, you know, I heard him talking, and this goes back to the GOP. Well, I see we have a caller out there, and I'll be right with you. I was listening to Fox News, and it's just amazing how they go out there and promote whatever candidates they're told to promote from the GOP. And Mitch McConnell was out there. And Mitch McConnell was out there saying to the effect that, the Tea Partiers are going to rally behind us. They'll come along because they want to change the Senate and this and that. So, yeah, they'll come along, even though I said they were a bunch of idiots. He didn't say that part, obviously. Well, because, you know, here I went and told them I've trashed the Tea Party candidates, but sure, they'll follow us anyway because they don't want the Democrats in there. I think he's going to be in for a rude awakening, and I think the GOP is going to be in for a rude awakening. On that note, let me get Mr. Klein on the show here. Hey, Charlie, how are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. I just thought of, Charlie, since you're talking about the voting and people knowing who to vote for, the accountability bill that passed the House, 300 and something to about 100 and something, for accountability for the veteran situation so that they can fire those who are found to be incompetent or violation. It died in the Senate because of the Democrats. That just came over. I mean, they had here a major majority in Congress voting in for the benefit of our veterans. It was bipartisan. The Senate refused to vote on it, waiting until after Labor Day and in June before they take it up. And Senator Rubio was there and says that, oh, no, this was something that they were talking about before. It was a planned thing. It wasn't just one of those spur-of-the-moment type things. And the guy, I can't remember the Democrat who did the complaining about, because they could have done it on a simple vote, but instead he wanted to do it with the bigger vote. And so he argued about that point, and so they just went in and said, well, we'll take care of it when we get back. That's how little the Democrats think about, that some Democrats think about our veterans and our military.
But was Rubio kind of going along with it, saying, oh, no, this is okay? Was Rubio okay?
Oh, no, no. Rubio seemed to be upset about the fact that the Senate did not take on the bill like they should have. He said, we should have been able to do it, then we could actually get right into it right now and get this thing worked on. But no, the Democrats imploded it.
Yeah, and it's
now it's a wait. Now it's a wait game. It's a wait game until June to do anything or have accountability. To have the accountability regarding the VA's how the VA veterans are being handled by the Veterans Administration. Go ahead.
I was going to say, what was their excuse again for why they wouldn't vote on it now?
Oh, I didn't get the full excuse because I was surprised that they said it died in the Senate.
Okay.
It was a very short segment on Greta Van Susteren. For those who are listening,
okay,
may want to go to Greta Van Susteren and listen to Rubio, because they passed over 300 people signed or voted for it. And he said, Rubio says that all they had to do was call all the senators out there in their office and ask them to vote for it right now, and it would have been a done deal. But no, they had to go ahead and cause for a cloture or whatever it is that delays something. Anyway, it's delayed until after they take their Memorial Day weekend to honor our fallen heroes that made it possible for them to sit in the Senate. They're going to go home. The Democrats are going to go home and honor those who died so that they could sit in the Senate, and they're denying health care and oversight of the health care system for the veterans. That is totally hypocritical, and to me, I would say that it is totally unconstitutional. To me, it is criminal what they have just done.
Criminal. Yeah. I mean,
a felony,
back and celebrate Memorial Day while you won't. Yeah, go ahead.
Uh-huh. I believe... No. The Democrats failed to read Obamacare, and now they went ahead and they did this to the veterans. I believe that we have collusion of the Democrats in the House of Representatives and in the Senate of working together to deny the people what we sent them there for, to work for us. They're working for themselves. I believe every one of them should be audited, right down to their credit cards, every credit cards, and all the expenditures that they and their families have put on any of the cards that are funded by the taxpayers. And we'll start with the IRS. But I'm incensed now. It's something else. Oh, and as you were talking, you know that the Rolling Thunder will be going into Washington this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the Rolling Thunder are for the America Spring. So something may be happening when over this holiday weekend, now that they've failed to vote for this oversight where they could get rid of the deadwood in the VA. Because it's a bureaucratic deal. And why didn't the president turn around and say, we're going to allow all the veterans who are in need to clear with the triage and go to a hospital? That's all he would have had to do. Clear your case with the triage, call the triage, and they will send you to the nearest hospital. That's all he had to do to get this thing nipped in the bud. But he doesn't do anything.
Isn't he out there on the record saying, oh, we're going to investigate? He knew nothing about it. Isn't he doing his usual crap on that again?
Oh, yeah. You know, he just heard about it in the news. He was actually, his transition staff was told about it in 2008 before he was elected. They knew about it, and he was campaigning about it. Oh yeah, we're gonna have to. I'm gonna make sure that the veterans are all well taken care of. I guess he meant well taken care of underground.
The other thing about this, and especially when we talk about Obamacare, because it was very apparent on some of these cases, like they made a judgment, well, this person's a little bit older, so we're not going to worry about them. They're going to be on the bottom of the list because they're about to die anyway. We're not going to waste our time. I mean, that totally seemed to be a certain mentality of it from some of the people that I heard being interviewed, some of the family members. But I'm like, talking to people, it's like, do you not understand this is what Obamacare is going to be?
What
we're doing for these people is exactly what socialized medicine is. They're supposed to care about the veterans. This is supposed to be the good plan. So if they're doing this to our veterans, what do you think they're going to do to you and me?
They're testing the Obamacare plan and the death panels out on the veterans.
They are. Socialized
medicine. Because the veterans plan is basically what Obamacare is going to be. All under government pay. Government, you know, our government, even the good ones, even the good people that there are very few of, they can screw up a one parade float. A one float parade. They would never get the float to operate in time or properly or look decent. Especially a float in the Rose Parade, our elected officials could not get it ready 2 years from now. They would all be arguing about where to put the pedals.
What color to use.
And what color to use. And I'm saying that they wouldn't even be able to get the bumper done in a year's time.
They wouldn't. That's the sad truth.
Our government can screw up a one-float parade. The thing on this VA thing is it was brought out by some of our good members in the Senate and Congress about issuing a card where the veteran can go to the hospital of his choice depending on his illness.
Right.
Those with PTSD, they could be given a card and cleared. All they have to do is clear them by triage. Say anybody who is being treated for or who is needs a PTSD treatment, they can go to the psychiatrist of their choice.
Right.
In the public thing. There'd be no line. They could call whoever they wanted to go in there and say, I need treatment for this. They could come up with a list of it. That could be for almost anything. Somebody needs a oncology check or whatever, you know, for the chemotherapy. They could go ahead and set that up at the hospitals.
Yeah,
no,
I mean,
we build a $500 million hospital here in Orlando. It's not done yet, and it may not be done for another 15 months because of kickbacks and oversight, because it always seems like people will get extra money when they do a contract with it, just like SunRail. I'm sure that all of those fat cats that made donations to Teresa Jacobs and Mayor Crotty and all of the commissioners are really very happy, smiling every time they go to the bank because of all the extra money they made building those terminals and that.
Oh, yeah.
Because
the money
that
they
made. We the people are paying for so much corruption. It's time to audit everybody, starting with the IRS and Lois Lerner. And Timothy Geithner should have all of their credit cards audited and then see if they've charge anything where it's additional income, and if they can't prove that they paid it in a timely fashion, that's additional income subject to principal, penalty, and interest all the way to the date of the purchase. I don't care if it's only for a bag of Pampers. That's what we should go
but
after.
Don't limit it to their credit cards. They need to be fully audited, and truly their immediate family needs to be audited too. Because that's the other thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, people are these representatives, we know John Micah did it with the earmarks to his daughter's company. They don't necessarily take the money direct. They go out there and launder it through either a family member or some associate. So you really need to follow the money line from these people.
Right. But if we start with the credit cards on everything, and we find one error in the IRS, we do the EPA, which we already know has $150,000 in charges on credit cards. I don't care if they've even paid it back. They have used a credit card of the United States of America, the taxpayers, the true government of America, for personal use. That is a no-no. You can't do it in private sector. You can't do it in the public sector. There's no law
that
gives them that right. Yep.
Yep. I totally agree, and you're more than welcome to hang on a few more minutes because we are just about to get started with the 8 o'clock hour, and I do see Sherry's out there. Hey, Sherry.
Hi.
And I see our guest is out there, Bob
okay.
Starr. Let me go ahead and get the mic open on that.
Mute me so I can just listen, okay?
Okay, I will do that. Thank you, Charlie, for calling in.
You're welcome.
And I don't know if you guys heard, Charlie was talking about the VA thing specifically and then how the money in the system as well, the corruption. Totally disgusting what we're doing to the veterans. And you know what? Obamacare, what they're doing to the veterans that they care about, that we were supposed to treat with such respect because they risked their lives for us. If we're treating them this way, what do you think you're going to get treated like with Obamacare? Anyway, on that note, Sherry, the one other thing I started at the very beginning of the show with, and I'm going to make sure I mention it to you because I know you will appreciate this, is the I was talking a little about Operation American Spring and the Bundy Camp in Glenbeck. I don't know if you heard it afterwards. I listened to the first Glenn Beck show, radio show, Monday. Glenn wasn't there. It was just Pat and Stu. Pat called the American people who participated or believed in the American Spring a bunch of psychos. I turned it off at that point, and I have not listened to Glenn Beck's show or any of his stuff since then. That was absolutely disgusting, and I encourage other people to make sure Glenn Beck knows that. On that note, welcome, Sherry, and I will hand over hour two for you.
Hi, this is Smart Talk with myself, Sherry Smart, and my co-host, Neil Rice. I don't know if Neil's on yet or not. And our guest tonight is Bob Starr. He's a former commissioner in Charlotte County. He did a great job when he was in office, and unfortunately, the people of Charlotte County just lost it. They did not reelect him, and what a huge loss that was, because now the county is really suffering financially, and Mr. Starr is going to go ahead and give us updates on what he's doing now to help garner attention so that people understand that, you know, we do have a voice in government and that it does need to be reined in. There is a lot of, I don't want to call it corruption so much as maybe just some bad administrators out there that could do a lot better job than they're doing watching out for our dollars and our tax resources. Mr. Starr, would you like to say hi, and thank you so much for coming on.
Sherry, hi. Please call me Bob.
Okay. I'm in
awe. Is Neil there yet?
Yeah, I don't know, but we're going to go ahead and talk without her. She might
not on yet. I'll let you know
okay.
when
right.
there.
Okay. But if you want to jump in and ask him questions, Sally, this guy did an amazing job. He was fighting with the EPA. He's done a lot of great stuff for Charlotte County, and boy, do they need him now more than ever. So I'm sorry, Bob, go ahead.
Well, I'm still around, Sherry. And as you know, the what goes on at the national scene and, you know, what goes on at the state, you know, which is pathetic in most cases, but all politics are local. And,
right.
you know, if we can bring our local government into alignment, you know, and out of the 67 counties, I do a lot of work looking at the different budgets, the different programs that they have, MSBUs, special assessments, you know, things like that. Because since I'm no longer a commissioner, I am doing Tax Watch. I'm the editor of a Tax Watch newsletter specific to Charlotte County, which I try to do monthly. And it's just, I want to give people the correct information and let them make the decision, you know, as to how they want to vote or what they want to do, you know, as far as administration and the way the county is run.
You know, it'd be nice if we had the same thing, someone like you, you know, a person that's already served, knows where all the skeletons are, knows how to cut through the minutia and the red tape, and would do what you're doing. Be basically a champion watchdog for the county.
You can do lots of things. I'm sure everybody in Southwest Florida is, is familiar with the scrub jay issue. that we're being held hostage for hundreds of millions of dollars by the federal government. Well, when I was a commissioner, we have what down here we're working on what's called a habitat protection plan. And right now, if you have a quarter acre lot and you want to build on it, and a scrub jay ever flew over it, or there was a picture of a scrub jay posted on a fence post, it's going to cost you between $14,000 and $20,000 that you pay to the federal government just to get a permit. Okay? That's great.
Goodness.
So Charlotte County is working on a habitat protection program for the scrub jays. And what this will entail, for a quarter acre lot, you're only going to have to cough up, a couple thousand dollars to the federal government. But it goes up from a quarter acre on up to $1 million is what you're going to pay if you want to develop your property under the Habitat Management Program. Now, what the federal government does with this money, well, what they've been doing with the money so far is they've been sending it out of the county to another county for their Habitat Management Program. But the end result in this whole thing is if Charlotte County buys into that, the state in Charlotte County owns 37% of the total land mass of Charlotte County. 37% off the tax rolls. There are no taxes paid on that. Plus, you have to manage it. If, in fact, we go with this habitat protection plan, here's what will happen. We will have to buy, with the money that the people are going to be paying in additional land. We will be up over 50% of Charlotte County will be owned by the state and Charlotte County, all taken off the tax rolls. What I did as a commissioner, I took a look at this, and it's not just scrub jays. The California beach fly is now on the endangered species list. So if you live in Malibu in California and you own beachfront property, you probably won't be able to go to the beach because a beach fly might land on you and you'd swat it, and that's a federal offense and you go to jail forever. Okay? There's salamanders, there's lizards. This is crippling the country. It's costing us millions of dollars. I got with Tom Rooney, Representative Rooney, who's a good friend of mine, and said, Tom, we need to change this. We need to change the scrub jays in Charlotte County. Tom wrote a letter to the Environmental Protection Agency, and the Environmental Protection Agency called the administrator in Charlotte County and said, we're not going to go through with your habitat plan. We're being investigated by not only Tom Rooney, but Marco Rubio. So our commission actually sent a letter to Tom Rooney and Marco and said, hey, don't pay any attention to Star. It was kind of like being in The Wizard of Oz. Don't pay any attention to that man behind the curtain. He doesn't speak for us. So we actually got the federal agency to turn over management of the scrub jays in the state of Florida. Immediately, we were sued by environmental groups, the federal government was. So we're screwed.
Oh, no. You do have some very active environmentalists in Charlotte County. I went to one of the meetings of staff to talk about the 2050 comprehensive plan, there were two women there that were just very vocal and
I know
adamant.
Exactly who they are.
just being harmless little housekeepers.
There were two commissioners that voted against the 2050 plan. I was one of them. Had we had one more commissioner vote, 2050 would have went back to the drawing board. I even went so far as to send a nasty email to the head of the DCA, the Department of Community Affairs, which approves the comp plans, because when we sent the comp plan up to Tallahassee, they changed a bunch of stuff. And I sent him a letter and said, guess what? Why did we spend 4 years working on this if it comes to you and you change everything? And, so the bottom line in that is he no longer has a job, but the comp plan is passed.
Is there any way to get a consulting group to review the comp plan for Charlotte County and maybe put a different light on it, or is that not in the cards?
Well, yeah, you can hire the group that did the that did the survey for Sarasota County, which Sarasota is adjusting their comp plan. But on the other hand, Sherry, you have to understand that you hire these consultants, it costs money.
$80,000.
Yeah, well, but that's just that consultant.
That's true.
We were spending millions and millions of dollars in 2000 before I got elected in 2008. Millions of dollars. That was one of my campaign promises. No more consultants. I worked for a very, very large company, okay? And that company that I worked for, we didn't hire consultants. People came to us for consulting because we hired the people that knew how to run our business and run it very successfully. Another thing is outside legal counsel. Before I was elected in 2008, we spent $14 million with an attorney out of Tampa, Florida, on phosphate litigation. And it wasn't even court. It was an administrative hearing. These are all the things that are wrong. You know, reasonable people, if you get involved, can tell you how to fix a comp plan. I can tell you how to fix it because I objected to the things that are in there when I was a commissioner. You know, I objected to those things, and that's why I did not vote for the comp plan, period, because I read it. Unfortunately, maybe the other commissioners didn't and didn't know what was in there.
Well, that's the thing that I think causes a lot of harm is the Sunshine Laws, in the regard that you guys can't sit down at a round table with a pitcher of beer and sit down and talk about this and pick it apart and decide what's good and what's bad. So you really don't know amongst your peers who's actually read anything. And if they're aware of something that might be really damaging.
Round table would be good, beer would be bad.
Well, I'm just thinking lighten the load a little bit for some time.
I know, that's fine. you could use a beer after you deal with four other people. And Sunshine needs, you know, there needs to be some reasonality to Sunshine. Here's an example. In the last change in the comp, or the last change in our enabling ordinances down here, we have every several years, we have a group of citizens that get together and they decide, you know, how we're going to change our charter, okay? One of the things that they recommended and we put on the ballot and people voted for was the county commission would be responsible for the economic development department. Well, okay, how do you do that? Because the economic development director can only talk to one commissioner at a time. So you have $1 million deal on the table, okay, or a multi-million dollar, like Cheney Brothers, which was on my watch, came here. You know, 400 or 500 jobs, you know, a huge investment in the county. You know, but we had to do it individually. So the economic development director, in order to get deals going, has to go from commissioner to commissioner to commissioner to commissioner, and then he can't tell you what the other commissioner said.
That's right, and it's exhausting.
Well, that doesn't work. So that never should have been on the ballot. It never should have been authorized because the county commissioners only have three people that they're in charge of, the county administrator, the county attorney, and now the economic development director. None of them can come into your office and say, this is what Commissioner Starr is going to do. Can't do it.
That's right.
All they can do is give you the facts. So, yeah, Sunshine is great, and I'm all for it, but you need to be able to sit down. You can do it in a public setting as long as it's advertised. But many times, if you have somebody like Cheney Brothers coming to town or like the Avis deal in Fort Myers, these people need confidentiality. So you can't say, okay, we're holding a public meeting because Avis is coming to town, and so the commissioners can talk about what they can offer them. So everything sprung on you at a meeting, and that's what you have to do. This is not just Charlotte County. The 67 counties in the state of Florida all have basically the same problems, and Sunshine is part of it.
I agree.
Yeah. In many cases, and this is something that is really poignant, in many cases, a county commission doesn't maybe has to come into the office once every 2 weeks or once a month, okay? Because they have all of these, I believe the county commissioners in Sarasota take a whole month off. They don't even work, okay? But when you look at Sarasota, you have all of these, you have North Court, you have all of these cities that have their own group of people, you know, their own police department, their own fire department, et cetera. Charlotte County has, we have 166,000 people in this county. We have one incorporated area, 15,000. So the commission here deals with a responsibility, something like the city of Miami. And it's a full-time job, but unfortunately, it's classed as a part-time job, and that's the unfortunate part of it. So, unless you want to work 80 hours a week, and you just take what staff gives you, and that's it. The neatest thing, and I'm maybe telegraphing this, but we have a sales tax initiative coming up, and it will generate now they decided to put it on for 8 years. The last one was on for 6 years. The first one was on 4 years. But now they're going to put it on for 8 years. But what they did was they're making the poster child for this expansion of the Justice Center. Okay? And what the commissioners were told and what every commissioner will tell you, this is mandated by the state of Florida. Okay? No, it's not. Okay? What's mandated by the state of Florida is what we already have. Okay? We have a courthouse. We have a justice center. We have all of the things that the Constitution of the state of Florida and the statutes that enabling statutes from that Constitution require. We've had it forever. But what they're selling is this is mandated by the state. $36 million in an expansion. And it's impossible to do because there's nowhere to expand. So all you have to do is go and read the statute, which is 28009, read the Florida Constitution, and it does say you have to provide a court. You have to provide, you know, the public defender, and you have to provide for supervisor, the clerk of courts, and all this stuff. We've already done that. So we've satisfied the mandate. We built a $26 million justice center in 2000, and I think it was finished in like 2006. So it's not mandated, but the commissioners believe that it is because they haven't looked at the statute.
Oh, good God.
Somebody needs to raise their hand and say, why is it mandated? Who is it mandated by? And, you know, if it's mandated, then somebody else ought to kick in some money. The statutes and the enabling information in the Constitution was written when Florida was made a state 100 years ago. There is no mandate that we have to expand our courthouse. That's where you get into trouble. Staff says this, then that's what you buy. Okay.
Now, this is my question. I am always so concerned when I look up those commissioners and look at their faces, how much are they relying totally on staff, and how many are going to do what you did? I mean, you were so diligent in your job that you looked through everything personally, and you picked it apart and wrote notes and asked questions. How many other commissioners sitting up there are actually doing that, or how many are actually sitting back and saying, hey, I defer to staff? I'm going to let staff tell me, you know, because, hey, that's what they're being paid for, and they know this so much better than I know it, so I'm just going to listen to whatever recommendations they make.
I'm not criticizing any commissioner, but I would say none, and I've been in Charlotte County for 30 years, and I don't know any commissioner that ever has done that. Here, if a commissioner did their homework, first thing I would have said when it was presented, this is a mandate, why? Whose mandate?
Right.
You know,
right.
And I would need an answer to that, but they don't get that. But, again, you have to understand, when you have a meeting, you know, there may be 10 contracts that are being let. If those contracts are going to be correct, you need to read every one of them, okay? Or there may be, 20 purchase orders. You know, you have to read them all. You have to deal with, if it's a quasi-judicial, you're dealing with land use, so you have to be familiar. You may have to go back and research the statutes to find out, okay, you know, what do the statutes say about this particular land use, and can we change it? So it's a huge, huge, huge job. And we do rely on staff too much, you know, and that's what needs to change. But it's always been that way.
Now, I'm not certain how county commissioners operate, but do you have the freedom to go and talk to your county attorney about certain things?
Or certainly do.
Okay, but are you being charged for that? I mean, is there a bill that goes towards that? Or
no, the county attorney works for the county commission. She is our attorney, or she is the county commission's attorney.
Okay.
It's your responsibility to talk to her. You know, and the administrator, he works for the county commission. It's your responsibility to talk to him. But then do you just a leap of faith, say, well, okay, should the county attorney have known that, yeah, it is mandated, you know, that we build that we have a courthouse? Well, we've had a courthouse forever.
Well, that's the thing. Wouldn't it be on his shoulders to kind of interject and say, I want you all to know that this is already mandated. You've already fulfilled the mandate.
Should be.
Okay.
Should
that's
be.
That's what I'm saying. I'm looking for, you know, where to point your finger and say, okay, this is your job responsibility. You
right.
should be speaking up at this point and saying something.
Well, and she will advise the chairman. Usually it's if the chairman, I was chairman for 2 years, so I worked very closely with Ms. Knowlton. And, you know, but usually the chairman has to ask the question. She's also the parliamentarian for the meeting. So if
right.
there are questions about procedure, you go to her. But, again, it's, you know, the problem that I have, and I can tell you as an individual in this tax watch, I am going to fight this sales tax, and I'm going to defeat it because it is not and it has not been used judiciously for the benefit of the people. You know, in my opinion, this will raise $144 million. The first sales tax that they passed, and I'm trying to think when it was, but I don't know the date. There were two items on there, a new jail, new justice center, okay? That was $56 million of your tax money. I haven't been to jail, and I haven't been to court, so in, you know, my 30 years. So that hasn't benefited me one bit. Now, I do have roads that need to be fixed in this county, okay? I would vote 100% if you took that $56 million and fixed all of the residential roads in Charlotte County and then got rid of the MSBUs. Because in Charlotte County, they have these MSBUs that are regional, okay? And that's to take care of your roads. When a subdivision is developed, the roads are accepted and dedicated for maintenance by the county, okay? Then they have an obligation to do that. In Charlotte County, there isn't enough money in these huge MSBUs, and those are municipal service benefit units. That's on your tax bill in addition to ad valorem, okay? In my subdivision, if I want my roads paved ever and they're falling apart, I have to set up another municipal service benefit unit and pay into that in addition to the one I already pay into so that my roads get done. And then Charlotte County will take 20 to maybe 30% of that in general administrative expenses. So if we put in $1 million, we only get $700,000 or $800,000 worth of paving. Those are the things I would support for a sales tax. Get rid of me having to pay extra and you know, do the infrastructure in the county. But then the second key is, which makes it revenue neutral, is you get rid of the extra MSBUs. You know, and that's a revenue neutral thing. The advantage is about 30% of the sales tax is paid for by visitors to Charlotte County. they drive on the roads and they have to go up and get their front end line when it falls into a sinkhole, you know, because it isn't paved. Those are the reasonable things that have to be done. Charlotte County is number one in the state of Florida in special assessments. MSBUs, Municipal Service Benefit Units, and MSTUs, Municipal Taxing Units. We are number one in the state of Florida. Per residential unit, we charge $350 a year. The next county to us is Monroe County, which is the Keys. They charge $180 a year. I don't know why that is. Maybe it has something to do with water. That's half of what we charge. Nine counties charge zero. Nine counties charge zero. Many counties, the highest, I think Sarasota and Lee County, our sisters' counties, are probably $150 versus half of what we are at least. But nine counties have none. Not $1 of ad valorem money, ad valorem property taxes in Charlotte County goes to paving our roads. Not $1.
Wow.
We're the only county that has that. I mean, it is such a convoluted mess, you know. And the problem that you have is, you know, you can't, as a commissioner, it's very, very difficult to get anything done because you need three commissioners before you can even talk about it.
That's right.
You need three commissioners to say, hey, I want to talk about this item, and if you don't have three, you aren't going to talk about it. Mine ordinance. I mean, this is classic. Oh, I was elected in 2008. I think in the 2008 budget, I found out, I was going over the budget with a fine-tooth comb, I found out we were paying the taxpayers $500,000 a year to regulate the mines in Charlotte County. Charlotte County has more dirt mines than any other county in the state. Okay, we have tons of them because everybody went and got their permits because it's very lucrative. The taxpayers were paying $500,000 a year to regulate these mines. And I said, wait a minute, that's not right. The mines are a business. They should be paying the freight. Everybody agreed. Okay. The next year, I said, are the mines paying? Nope, not yet. They got it down to $250,000. That was 2009. It's now 2014. We are still paying to regulate the mines. There is no mine ordinance. Okay. It's really simple. All you do is you write an ordinance, you divide up how much it costs to have a department, and people go out and see that these people are doing the right things. You divide it up by the number of mines, and that's what they pay. We still don't have one. So from 2009 until 2014, the taxpayers of Charlotte County have been paying $250,000 a year out of our ad valorem tax dollars to regulate the mines.
Now, can the county administrator take care of that, or does this have to be done by the commissioners?
Well, I requested.
Does the county administrator just decide, hey, I'm going to do this, or does it take a vote by the commissioners?
It would take a vote by the commissioners to approve the ordinance, but
okay.
Administration and the county attorney have to get together and write the ordinance. I already wrote it. I wrote it before I left and gave it to them. It still isn't passed.
Okay. Wow.
So well,
that seems like a fairly simple fix, you would think.
Well,
I mean, the due diligence has already been done. The heavy lifting, you already did it by writing it.
Exactly. But
so the only missing step is get your county administrator and your attorney together and then submit it to the commissioners, and then they take a vote, right?
Yep.
Wow.
But you need... But I wasn't able to get it done in my 3 years that I had left. Okay, we never got it passed. We never got it written. And I've been out of office since 2012, and that's 2 years. It still isn't written.
I mean, this seems really unusual to me because I'm sitting there looking at government now, like most people, with a very jaundiced eye. And every time you hear from government, it means they have your hand in your pocket again. Wouldn't it be a delight to have a local government that's actually putting money back into your pocket?
Yep.
With
added benefits. Kind of the way it should work. When I took office, I'm not trying to blow my horn, I'm just trying to give you examples. When I took office in 2008, the year before I took office, 2007, which was just before the crash, 2006, just before the crash, okay, the budget in 2007 for Charlotte County was $1.3 billion.
Wow.
Just Charlotte County, okay. I took office in 08, the bottom dropped out of the market. Our property valuations in Charlotte County, all the ad valorem taxable properties in this county was $24 billion in 2007. In 2008, it dropped to 12. Okay.
Whoa.
So our taxable for our ad valorem tax base was half of what it should have been. Now, at that point, you know, the commission had a decision to make. Do we make up the deficit by raising taxes, or do we get serious and do we cut the budget? From 2008 to 2012, actually 2011, Charlotte County's budget was cut by $100 million, okay? So that's over 10% cut. Our staffing was reduced. We went from 17 departments to 10, okay? And we did not roll up the millage rate. We did not increase property taxes at all during that time, okay?
That's wonderful.
Okay, but fast forward. 2012, okay, I'm no longer on the commission and we have new people in there. The budget was raised $47 million. They added all kinds of staff, and we will be back at a $1.3 billion budget probably in the next 2-3 years. So what did we gain? We didn't need to, no, in those years, the budget was passed in 15 minutes. We had nobody talking against the cuts. We had nobody, you know, picketing in front of the county building. That's what needs to happen, but it isn't going to happen. I mean, it just isn't. And that's why I'm very vehemently opposed to the sales tax. That's a conservative estimate for the Treasury of $18 million a year. Probably it will be closer to 20, maybe 22. And for the 8-year period, that's $144 million on the conservative side out of your pocket, okay? And what they want to spend it for doesn't benefit me at all. And I'm going to work very, very hard to see that it doesn't pass.
How are you going to bring awareness? I mean, I know that you have your tax letter, but what other ways are you trying to bring awareness to this? So the people that can vote and pay attention will get the message.
Okay.
How are you going to get your word out there? Because I'm telling you, it's very frustrating.
I've run lots of campaigns. I've been involved in lots of campaigns. What has to happen is you have to have a campaign like you're running for office. You know, there'll be absentee ballots mailed. Somebody needs to get the information about this tax with their absentee ballots. You know, people need to make phone calls. You need volunteers who will make phone calls and say this is bad and this is why. Okay? So I'm going to run a campaign just like we're running for office to inform people, you know, as to what's going on, and then they make the decision. That's the way you defeat it. The county's going to spend, they've allocated $33,000 for promotion. The people who benefit, and this is the thing you really have to look at. You're going to build a $36 million justice center. Who's going to design that? Some engineer. And guess what? That engineer is probably going to be picked by the commission. And if the commission has a preferable engineer, $36 million in engineering project, probably 10% of that, $3.6 million, who's going to build it? You know, hopefully they'll find a local contractor. You know, you have to look beyond the smoke and mirrors. You know, the people promoting this are the ones that stand to make money from it, period.
Absolutely.
Bottom line, and people have to realize that. And I'm not against people making money. I think it's great, you know, and I want everything done locally. But it has to be, you know, who needs it, who cares, and who pays. Those are
the
kind of...
Well, like you said, it has to be of a benefit to the people. And like you said, you already have the facility. Not only do you have the facility, but would you please tell our listeners where this facility is located and what could have been done with that property that would generate huge tax revenues?
We, in our benevolence, when we built our $26 million Justice Center, we built it on Charlotte Harbor, the most pristine piece of property in the city of Punta Gorda. Gee, now, and I opposed it as a citizen, and, you know, my question to the commissioners, it's in a flood zone. Are you going to have life jackets available in the bottom floors for the people? But the point is, we could have had, let's say, a Ramada resort on that property, paying thousands of dollars in property taxes, bringing people in, giving us bed tax, giving us sales tax. We put a justice center there. Now, our jail is clear out in the east part of the county, so guess what? When you get prisoners and you have transported from the jail up to the justice center, you need two deputies, you need a van, you know, and they spend a half a day until they go to court. You know, the logical thing would have been, you build the thing next to the jail.
Right.
You know, then you just walk them across the lawn. That's the way that works. And the problem with this $36 million renovation, the original Justice Center cost $26 million, okay? There is nowhere to put an addition onto it except to go up.
That's right. You can only
up. There is nowhere. So what you're faced here with is, you know, the highest and best use of that property certainly wasn't the Justice Center. So do you complicate this? And again, there is no, absolutely no justification for fixing it. Here's if you need more space in the Justice Center, the clerk uses the bottom floor for record storage. Guess what? That can go to you store it, okay? And that's probably $200 a month, you know, get good locks. Number two, if you need more space, we have the old courthouse, which we used until 2006 or until 96 when we built this new courthouse, which is, you know, basically not that old. So you just use the old courthouse, which is now being used for the supervisor election. You use the old courthouse for another court area. You know, it doesn't cost you a dime.
And it's a very attractive building.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with it.
In fact, we tried to get them to put the DCA in there, the District Court of Appeals. You know, and that would have been the court. It's a beautiful building. It's been all restored. The courtrooms are great. There's plenty of area there. And it's only 6 blocks from the Justice Center. So rather than $36 million, you get the supervisor of elections to go to another building and put his voting machines in, and you turn that into the courthouse annex if you need it. Now, the bottom line is this consultant who did the assessment of the need, his assessment is we will not be adequate in 2033. So we will actually be, we have to do something by 2033. Okay? We're trying to fund it right now. This is 2014. But we really do not
have crystal balls. That's why I get upset with the whole 2050 plans and this sort of thing.
Yep.
We honestly don't know that far out what's going to be happening.
Oh, I know. What's Eric Holder and what's Obama doing right now? They're looking at maximum sentences for minor drug offenses. You know, you get busted for a bong pipe, and it's a mandatory 5 years in jail. They're looking at that federally. They're going to look at it at the state. I was talking
Turn you into a criminal?
No. I was talking to one of the state's attorneys, and I said, now, if in fact you didn't get busted for, you know, you got a $50 ticket for having a joint of pot in your car or whatever they have, or bong pipe, if you just got a $50 ticket and didn't have to come to court, how much would that reduce the traffic in the courthouse? Probably 20% to 25%. Oh, gee. So all of a sudden, this deficit that's going to happen by 2033 is shrinking by 15%. And they're going to do it. The feds are going to do it within the next year or so. Again, you have to use your head and you have to ask the questions. And we don't. We don't do it as a state. We don't do it federally. So we've got a beautiful piece of property that has a justice center on it, and it's a great view of the harbor, and it doesn't pay a dime, and we could have had a very nice resort on there, paying taxes, bringing people to town. We would have saved hundreds of thousands of dollars in transporting prisoners. What's wrong with this picture? Somebody really didn't do their homework, right?
Right. So why doesn't Charlotte County hire you as a consultant?
Oh, I don't want to be a
consultant. Then you can sit there and map out everything for them and present a plan where they can,
I tell them on a regular basis. I volunteered. If in fact, our county administrator, Mr. Sandrock, for some reason or other, is no longer the county administrator, I will apply for that job, and I will do it for $1 a year. He makes $130-plus benefits, so he's around $200,000. And I will go in there. I will hire somebody to be my protege, my assistant. I'll cut $200 million out of the budget, and you won't even know it's gone. And when I'm done, I'll come back home and mow my lawn. I made that offer, so we'll see.
Well, that sounds like a really good offer to me. I mean, we all know you're very well qualified for that. And
sure.
I can't see, you know, here they can make an instant savings right there.
Yep. Well,
you're not tied in with the whole staff cronyism thing. That you would be willing to go ahead and let heads roll.
Yep. And they know that. And you know, like I said, the first year I was in, we went from 17 departments to 10. The sheriff's budget in Charlotte County is about $58 million. I bucked him on every time he came for budgets. I was the only commissioner that said, this is too much money, you've got to cut it. Couldn't get anybody else to help me. The fire department. I mean, what's going on in the fire department? It costs too much money. We need to do some things. And the things could have been done without the rank and file, because the top end of the fire department, you have 13 people making the bulk of the money out of the budget. You know.
Wow.
But again, these, they don't want change. That's why I didn't get reelected. You know, we give about $1.7 million a year to not-for-profits, including the United Way, which is $600,000 of my tax dollars, that we write a check to United Way, and they decide who gets the money. Is that good government?
No,
No.
In fact, I don't approve of any of that.
Well, there are not-for-profits that provide a service of the county, and I'm certainly in favor of funding them, but you elected the commission, and they should decide who is providing the service. And they don't. They just give a check for $650,000 to United Way, and United Way decides who gets the money. Oh, well.
Go ahead, Sally. What were you going to say?
Yeah. I'm here in Orange County, and you see the wheeling and dealing. You know that all they do is rubber stamp any of these, what these developers want, and this and that. And you see the games going on that you never see in the sunshine. Lord only knows how many true backroom deals they have going on. But, I mean, isn't that really the same thing that's going on in Charlotte? They're just sucking up to whoever their friends are, whoever they want to give the money. None of them are serving the public interest. They're out there lining their own wallets one way or another. And at what point, as a commissioner, how many times were you confronted with somebody who wanted to wheel and deal with you, or how many times was a fellow commissioner saying, gosh, it sure would be nice if you'd help me on this, I'd vote for this, or, you know, that kind of garbage that goes on that we know it goes on all across the board. But here in Orlando and Orange County, it is so disgraceful.
Okay.
How is it in
well,
smaller county?
Okay. I can tell you I was never approached by anybody. I ran and I funded my own campaign. I didn't accept a dime from anybody. In fact, after I won the primary, I had all the people lined up to give me $500 checks. I refused those checks. Okay, I didn't take a dime. And I was not the person that you would go to for a deal if there was a deal, period. Because I did it, you know, I'm the most honest, upright person that, you know, I'm not a politician at all. I didn't need the job. I took the job because, well, my campaign slogan was, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. And I did. Okay? And I didn't.
Yeah.
I managed to alienate a lot of people, a lot of powerful people. And that's what I went there to do. You know, I was very clear on my campaign promises, what I would do, and I did that. You know, there were no consultants. There were no outside legal counsel. You know, we were going to cut the budget. We were going to cut the staffing, and that's exactly what I did. And I was chairman the first 2 years, or the second 2 years, so I had control of the board. And that's how we were able to cut $100 million out of the budget. I know what happens in other counties. I know what happens here sometimes, but you know, it just has to stop, and it will stop here. Charlotte County, in Tax Watch, if you want to go to www.charlottetax.org, a lot of this stuff is on there. But anyhow, Charlotte County in the last 15 years has wasted $250 million, $250 million. We bought a utility for $50 million called General Development Corporation, General Development Utility. We did a quick take. This was one of the deals, a backroom deal up on the fifth floor. We thought it was worth $50 million. That's fine. You can take my property. Court of Competence Jurisdiction said, well, it's worth another $165. So now we own a utility with $110 million in debt that we thought was going to be $50 million. Okay? That's why our utility rates are high. Murdoch Village, you may have heard of that.
Oh, yeah.
It's totally famous, okay? We asked the federal government, could you tell us how we can redevelop and make a CRA out of this area in the middle of Port Charlotte? And the government said, okay, you take 1,000 acres, okay, you rezone it, you reconfigure it, and you try to get people to sell you their property. If, in fact, they don't want to sell you your property, you may have to take it, okay? Our benevolent commissioners said, well, gee, if 1,000's better, you know, then 10,000 is even better. So we go in, take the whole piece, we kick everybody off, we lose $250,000 a year in tax revenue, we invested $115 million in the property and couldn't sell it, okay? So we're paying, well, actually we were paying $16 million, a month on this property in interest. Now we're down to $4 million, okay? So that was $115 million. That's not producing any value, and it's also not producing any tax revenue because we kicked all the people out and bulldozed their houses down. Sunshine Lake, Sunshine Waterway, that's up to $4 million. That could have been settled for, probably $50,000 in the beginning. The big ones are these lawsuits on Rotunda. The first one was settled for $13 million. This is because the judge said we had to provide utilities. Number two is pending. It'll probably be $13 million. Then there's number three. That will come up in the court. That'll be another $13 million. So now you're talking $50 million, another screw-up that had no benefit. You add all those up, and it's $250 million. In lawsuits and just bad decisions because
and
somebody
no
didn't
have rolled. That's what
no.
I find fascinating.
No
not
head
one
rolled.
Head. No one's
no, head
no one's been fired or it just amazes me. It amazes me. And then the people in Charlotte County, I mean, they've got to go to bed every night with the knots in their stomachs wondering what the heck's going on. How much more expensive is it going to be to live there? And then how long is it going to take before the county actually goes bankrupt?
Well, you're not going to go bankrupt because you have the ability to tax, okay? So, well, okay. The
and
state
then
of Florida,
the great flight, everybody's fleeing, you know, wouldn't that be their option?
Well, that will be the only option they will have, okay,
Yeah. Eventually.
We will get to the point that you can't do the smoke and mirrors anymore, you can't borrow money, so you're going to have to raise ad valorem. We're about number four in the state as far as ad valorem revenue. I think our millage rate's probably 5.75%, okay? But what you have to understand is outside of that millage rate are all of these special assessments, okay, which are hundreds of millions of dollars to pave the roads, to provide water and sewer, to do this and do that. all other counties handle that out of that 5.5%. Charlotte County has gotten to the point that everything is a special assessment, so it doesn't go into the ad valorem side of it. The state of Florida only allows a county to have 10% in ad valorem. If you added all the special assessments in, it would be well over 10%. So, you know, eventually this will all come back to nail you, and that's when, you know, that's when you're going to have to get real. If the sales tax fails, okay, that is, over 8 years, $144 million that the county has had for the last, you know, 10 years, 12 years, coming into their coffers, okay? If that fails, then they have to figure out how they provide all these services that they're planning on doing with this tax money. They have to figure out how to do it with the income that they have. Gee, wouldn't that be novel?
Wouldn't that be great?
You cut expenses. You know, like I said, 2008 to 2012, $100 million went on the budget. Nobody even knew it was gone because it was stuff that didn't need to be in there to begin with. So I have an idea. There's probably $200 million in there you could get out. That offsets the $144 million, and you got $50 million left, and you can start providing the services with the revenue stream that you have. That's how business operates. And I'm a businessman. You know, that's why none of this makes any sense to me.
The frustrating thing is it makes so much sense to me. I don't understand why anybody wouldn't sit down and listen and then, you know, the rest of the commissioners sit there and say, okay, let's go for it. Let's do this. I just don't understand their thinking.
We'll work on them. You have to understand the last lady that talked, there is a culture, and there are people who have a lot of power because of donations or because of whatever reason, you know, and they get, you know, here, I always opposed the $1.5 million we gave to not-for-profits, okay? And I was very vocal about that. But when you do that, think of all the people that are involved with not-for-profits. You know,
I know.
Hundreds, thousands, and then you get the reputation. Oh, and most of those not-for-profits don't get any money from the county. You know, most of the not-for-profits operate just fine on their own. But once you're against something like that, or the sheriff's budget, you know, Sheriff of Charlotte County has 600 deputies, okay? You extend that out to the multifamilies, you know, it could be 3,000 or 4,000 people. They're definitely going to vote against you. So if you're a politician, you don't come out and do things like that because you're not going to win. I didn't care if I won or not. That wasn't why I got elected in the beginning. You know, it was to do the job. I did the job. And you ask anybody in this county, the paper even endorsed me, and they didn't even like me, you know, but they endorsed me. They said he did what he said he was going to do, but he did too much. That was the quote. He did too much, you know.
Meaning,
so that's what...
meaning what? You did too much. You mean you did the job too well?
I did too much. I said I was going to cut taxes. I said I was going to cut staff. I said I was going to cut consultants. I said I was going to cut outside legal counsel. And I did it, but I did too much of it. So somebody got their feelings hurt or lost a lot of money. And so don't elect me again. The Sun actually ran a full page and actually said, if in fact, not for profits, if in fact, you don't want your revenue stream cut, you got to get rid of Star. How do you compete with that? But the cool thing is, I sleep well nights. I did exactly what I told you I was going to do. I was mad as hell, and I wasn't going to take it anymore. And I voted no on budgets. I voted no on the comp plan. I voted no on anything because if it didn't benefit the people and it wasn't the right thing to do, I didn't care if the other four voted for it. It or not, I voted no.
How big a team of volunteers are you going to need to make those phone calls?
Well, we'll see. What I'm going to do when the phone calls will mostly be for early voting. I'm going to run a campaign against the sales tax. I'll get the cards printed up, and we'll mail them just like you do for the absentee ballots, you know.
Right.
But where I want to make phone calls is for the early voters. And I'll line up the crew here to do that. We have the names of the people who voted absentee the last time. So I'll print up 200 sheets or so, 200 calls or so, and people can do it from their home. It's not really that hard. But we're going to beat this because it needs to be beaten. And they need to know. I'll share with you, Sherry, when next time I see you, I was able to come up with the Delphi plan to pass the sales tax. And it is incredulous. It's going to be in the newsletter at charlottetax.org, www. I mean, it's pathetic. I can't believe they put it down on paper. This was the last one. I mean, it says things like, make sure that you don't have any intelligent people in the group, you know, because they'll create problems. I really chuckled when I read it because that's gonna do them in. And what they did, the commission did, they actually made the Justice Center the focal point. It's actually going to be on the ballot, in the ballot language. So pretty much shot themselves in the foot, I think, on that one.
Do you know who's leading the call on this? You know, the one that's the biggest advocate of this?
What's that?
This is a question because I have no idea. Do you know which commissioner is the one that's leading the charge and saying, oh, this is a great thing to do?
The sales tax?
Right.
No. They all voted for it except Commissioner Constance. And the only reason Chris didn't vote against it, Commissioner Constance didn't vote against it, because it was for 8 years. I'm not sure, I really don't have a clear picture, but one of the other projects that I think made the cut was $700,000 to reconstruct the bunkhouse out in Placida. This was a bunkhouse that the people that worked in the phosphate docks out in Boca Grande lived in. It's probably a 20 by 20 building, $700,000 to refinish it. I could do it for $250. It came before the commission when I was on there and we voted it down. But I think that was one that was being considered. Whether it passed or not, I don't know. I could do that for $400 on my Home Depot credit card. $700,000.
Hey, excuse me, guys, just so you know, we've got about 3 minutes left.
All right. Well, we're having fun. I'm talking a lot. Anything else you want to know?
Well, no,
this is great. I love it.
Well, it's also discouraging, you know, and I'm hoping that your campaign is highly successful. And could you put a little asterisk or a little star on your campaign when you're mail outs for against the tax? Why don't you also let them know that you're willing to go to work for $1 a year?
Oh, okay. Well, they all know that. I've already talked to – I have three commissioners that are still talking to me at this point. So I've already had lunch with all of them and told them I want the job. I took the administrator, Ray Sandrock, to lunch and told him I want your job, period, and I'll do it for free. You know,
and I
don't want –
He's not sleeping well at night. You know that, right?
Well, and Ray and I worked very, very well together. I'll say this, and it's a defense. We set up performance-based budgeting, which is a form of zero-based budgeting, and he was the budget administrator at that time. Without Ray, without Mr. Sandrock, we wouldn't have cut $100 million out of the budget. Because, I mean, I worked very, very close with him. I was the chairman at that time. I worked very, very close with him, and he in fact told me, he said, I don't think we'd do this in a year, but we did. And
we did not
raise taxes with a 50% dive in our, and we didn't burn that many reserves. Many counties, when they had the downturn, had huge reserves, and they supplemented with reserves, but then most of them eventually had to raise taxes. We never did.
That's wonderful. But now it looks like you're heading right for a you-know-what storm.
$47 million, they raised it. First budget.
Yeah. Okay, thank you so much for being our guest. I really appreciate your time. And let's keep in touch over this whole time.
We will.
Well, thank you so much.
All right, Sherry. Good talking to you, and you have a good evening. Thank you.
And you as well.
Great information. It's the just knowing what really goes on.
Oh, he's an amazing man. He's absolutely phenomenal. And the whole really the county is just really they screwed up when they did not reelect him.
Yeah, and you know, when I ran for Orange County Mayor, I was told I was too honest for the job.
Well,
that's
what happened. That's right. He didn't owe anybody, and there were no backdoor deals and all that stuff, and he really wanted to get in and just clean it up and do the best he could do for the people that live there without putting the burden on them, the financial. Well, thank you so much, Sally. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. Great show, and we will be here next week, same time, same place, same bat channel.
Okay, and I'll find out what happened to poor Neil.
Okay,
bye.
No problem. Good night. God bless, and we will be here next week, everyone.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.